Hello, family. Welcome back to the Explore the Extraordinary podcast. I'm Betty, and today I'm joined by Travis. Travis is a podcast host and a spiritual explorer, and we connected recently through his podcast. He's an amazing video editor and apparently a documentary filmmaker, and I was just really impressed with your open-mindedness and your willingness to create conscious space for spiritual experiencers. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to get to learn more about you. So thank you for your service to our community at IONS. And I'm going to toss it right over to you to share about who you are.
That was an amazing introduction. Thank you so, so much. I feel very grateful to be here. I'm not really sure where to start. Should I just start with my spiritual journey and like what led me to where I am today?
That would be great.
Okay. Well, I grew up traditionally in a Christian family, like a lot of people have. And, you know, Christianity for me, going to church was really just a way of hanging out with my friends. I didn't really have any sort of spiritual connection. And the stories were kind of just stories for me. It never really resonated with me in any way, shape, or form. However, I did have an experience, a spiritual experience at summer camp. I remember it very vividly. We were praising God and we were all singing and our hands are lifted up high and we're accepting Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. And I remember the pastor at the time, Brent, he was telling people that were ready to accept Jesus in their life to step forward. And I remember doing this and feeling the weight of the world lifting up off of my shoulders and experiencing pure nirvana. And it was beautiful. I will never forget that experience for the rest of my life. And the only other time I experienced it was later on when I was in my later 20s and I had another coming to Jesus moment. And I had asked again for him to accept me and forgive me for my sins. And I experienced it again, but it was only like half of the lifting up experience. And after that, I've never really experienced it quite like that. I've had a lot of things happen to me in my life, but that one thing I still remember. But things change, you know. As time progressed, I shied away from Christianity. I didn't go to church anymore. I was in the military for a few years and I did some prayer, but I just fell away from it. And in my early 20s, there was a popular television show called Ghost Hunters. And I was absolutely fascinated with the idea of using science with like digital recorders and things to be able to explain the existence or non-existence of these spirits, as they say. And I just remember as a kid, you know, sitting by the fire and listening to ghost stories and being fascinated by it. But I never denounced it. I was never in a position, I think, in my life where I said, oh, well, this isn't real. This is nonsense. I've always been very open-minded with things. And so I wanted, okay, I'm going to be a ghost hunter. I want to do this. And so I reached out to a local paranormal group called HPI, which is Haunted Paranormal Investigations, which was in Sacramento. And they were a large group of about 250 members. And I reached out with them and I went to some of their meetings and I got to go on some of their investigations. And I found it to be highly unprofessional concerning that my source was watching ghost hunters. And so I started my own group and I had a group of about 3 to 4 people. And I had gone out and bought all the same gear that they had from the television show. And I started my own group and I did this for about 10 years. I was a ghost hunter and I investigated properties all over California, mostly in the Sacramento area. I did old bars and hotels and graveyards and all manners of like locations. I did a lot of people's homes. People would reach out to me. I was known in my community as a ghost hunter. If people had a paranormal issue, they would reach out to me for these things. And in this experience of getting into that world, it opened up the floodgates for virtually everything, spiritual, ghost, demons, all level of like pretty much awful things that you could really do, I experienced. Now, I didn't have any major poltergeist experiences, but I did have spirits that would attach to me, follow me home, haunt me, cause all manner of havoc. I did experience those things. And I can say that by putting myself in an environment like that, I became more open and susceptible to that spirit realm, because prior to that, I had never had any experience with spirit. I didn't even know if it existed, but it did not take long for me to realize that ghosts are real and that they do exist and that they are everywhere. They are everywhere. You could probably right now turn on your recorder on your phone, ask some questions, and I wouldn't be surprised if you got answers. Now, does that mean you should do it? No, I don't think you should. I'm saying, with my personal experience doing what I did, if anybody wanted to get into ghost hunting, I would say don't do it, because you just don't know what you're messing with. And it was just a hobby for me. It was a thing that I did, but it became something more. I had gotten past the point of realizing, okay, this is real, but I had got to the point where I was like, well, we really need to help these spirits cross over. We need to help them go back home, because a lot of them, we get stuck. A lot of them, they get stuck in like their death, or a lot of them don't even know that they're dead. Like that movie, The Sixth Sense, that's real. They don't know they're dead. It takes a long time sometimes for these spirits to catch on to that. And so I wanted to start helping them transition over. I had a psychic with me, and she was a very powerful psychic medium. She could see and speak to the dead. And so I went through all this experience of negativity and depression and oppression, because if you don't know how to protect yourself, you're going to allow negative things in your life. And also, I wanted to say Ouija boards. Don't ever touch a Ouija board. It's not a game. It's very, very dangerous. I would say Ouija boards are relatively the same as tarot. You have to protect yourself. You have to set intention. But a Ouija board is just opening the floodgates for all manner of chaos, and I don't recommend it. So I did this for a while, and then eventually I got to a point where I realized that I wasn't really doing myself a service to myself. I was trying to help everyone else and doing virtually nothing spiritually for myself. And so I quit ghost hunting. I walked away from it, and I never went back to it again. I then got into researching past life regressions. And the first book that I read was called The Law of One. And The Law of One is a series of, I guess, investigators in the 70s got together and started doing channeling. And they were basically channeling through a person, a female, and they were making contact with basically extraterrestrials. And they would ask them these questions, and these questions and these answers would be very profound answers to many of the questions that humanity has had over the years of the meaning of life and why we're here, and even like some of the great mysteries of the world. And I found it fascinating. It opened up the floodgates for possibilities of what we can perceive into our past and our future and our dreams and the meanings of things. But it also was quite dangerous, because the guy that wrote the book ended up killing himself, and I think he murdered his family. Don't quote me on that, but I remember the outcome being very bad, because he had basically said that the ETs were following him and that they were whispering terrible things into his mind. I don't know. It got a bit crazy. I then got into some books called Dolores Cannon. And Dolores Cannon is a quantum, she had a school, QHHT, was some sort of quantum healing practice. And it's the practice of putting people into hypnotherapy. So it's hypnosis. And I was fascinated by this. I was fascinated with the idea that you could put somebody into a deep theta wave state when they're in that dream state, and then you can ask them questions like Edgar Cayce, exactly the same thing. And then they would be able to, access that subconscious mind, that recording device that records absolutely everything you see and do and think. and then be able to ask it questions, and then it's able to then repeat or give you the answers to the things that you're looking for. And that absolutely fascinated me. I was just enthralled with that. And I got very, very deeply into the past life regressions and what people were able to regress from. And some of my favorite parts were people that had experiences with Jesus Christ. And for me, you know, finding out about what Jesus did between the ages of 12 to the ages of 28 to 30, there's this huge gap that we don't know about, but there were people that experienced it, and they knew where he was and what he was doing, what his purpose was. And I was just enthralled with that. I wanted to know more. And so I got into doing my own hypnotherapy. I was reaching out to some of the practitioners that worked under Dolores Cannon, because unfortunately she had passed away right when I was starting to look into it. And I went in and I did my own sessions. I did many, many, many sessions, and I still have the recordings from them. And I experienced some profound things. I was extraterrestrial on different planets and at different places and different dimensions. And I experienced many of my past lives. And the interesting things about my past lives is that they really, really tie into the current one that I have now. And it just really, really made sense onto like why I'm here and the decisions I've made and the experiences that I'm having now. Sometimes you wonder about certain things, especially like, I guess, bad luck or things that seem to keep happening to you over and over again. You're not really sure why. And it helps you tie that all together to figure it out. I highly recommend it. I think hypnotherapy is probably one of the safest ways to go about discovering who you truly are and overcoming some obstacles. And then I also got into Reiki. I got into virtually, I guess, everything that they call New Age, which I think New Age is a silly word, because to me, it sounds like something that's new, but it's not. It's just, it's ancient, but people attribute it to pseudoscience because they don't understand it. But, you know, I guess it's all in the perception of the person. I did this for a long time. I was meditating every day. I was eating a relatively healthy diet, and I was taking good care of myself, and I was very much just in tune with myself. And I had some very good experiences with that. My life completely changed. I learned about the power of the subconscious mind and the power of the law of attraction, and how important it is to really focus in on the words that you say and the thoughts that you think, because words are spells. Words are spells, and it's important. So when you say something poorly about yourself, you're creating that for yourself. You're putting power into something that is negative, even if you don't want it. So if something bad happens to you and then you tell the whole world about it, you're putting more energy into that bad thing to then happen again for you. So you have to be careful with everything you think and everything you say. That's what's, I think, and all of this really, after everything that I've been through, because I want to keep it short because I know you have a little bit of time, but I had kind of a falling away with everything, and I wasn't doing anything anymore. And I was just really centrally focused on my career and my job and paying my bills. And then I got into van life, and that's a whole other story. That was a great story, but whole other different story. I fell away from all of my spirituality. I didn't even mention the fact that I was doing psychic readings for people. I had started doing tarot, but I found that tarot was more like training wheels for psychics. We don't need tarot. We don't really need any form of divination. Everything is within you. Everything is within you. You can access everything all over this world just by simply going there in your third eye and your let thy single eye be still. Anyways, I discovered that I was a psychic through doing those past life regressions. God, I completely forgot about that. Sorry. Anyways, this book right here, the Holy Bible. I avoided reading this book for a really long time. I didn't understand it. I found it confusing. But I found somebody, his name is John St. Julian, and he is probably somebody that I would consider the closest to what Jesus Christ was like. He's a very selfless man. He's here for the children. He helps people on a daily basis. And he has his own YouTube channel where he kind of basically gives sermons on not Christianity. He's not a Christian, but he believes in the sacred secretion, and he's experienced it for himself, which is where everything has led up to where I am now in terms of my beliefs. And sacred secretion is, to me, the most important thing that we could ever teach anybody. It has to do with meditation. It has to do with fasting. It has to do with connecting with God in the way that he intended, not through mushrooms or drugs or any form of manipulation, but through a process that God created within all of us. So that's basically where I am in my life right now.
Wow, Travis, thanks so much for sharing. And it's so great to get to know you better. And you hit on a lot of different things. I think something that came up for me while you were talking, well, it kind of triggered me. Let me get into it, shall I? But that there's only one, I don't want to say one way, right? Because you tried all of these different things to come to different spiritual realizations. And I want you kind of maybe to share a little bit more about the sacred secretion. We talked about it a little bit on your podcast, and I had never heard of it before. I do think, though, that there are all of these different sort of training wheels or all these different modalities that are left here for different people to experience. If we all had the same passion for the same route to spiritual truth, it would probably be kind of boring, like how I imagine heaven is. Like, we're all just in one frequency all the time with each other. I really do think that it's probably boring there. So we come down here and we get to have like these individual personality profiles who are really passionate about certain things. And you can be passionate about multiple things in one lifetime. You know, and I love that you shared about that, that you've gone through all of these different phases to find where you are now. And it sounds like you probably are open-minded to that shifting in the future too, because we already know that open-mindedness works because we've experienced so many different things. And me too, I experienced so many different things that I thought, oh, this is my thing. And then another door opens and it's like, oh, well, maybe this. So do you want to share a little bit about the sacred secretion, what exactly it is?
Absolutely. So I discovered the sacred secretion through John, the guy I was telling you about, and he has a few different sermons on his YouTube about it. So if you look up John St. Julian, you should be able to find his YouTube. But basically, the sacred secretion is an alchemical process that happens within every single human being. It is part of God's creation. And so what happens is when the moon enters your sun sign, so your birth zodiac sign, the oil is released down the spine to the sacrum bone, which is shaped like a cave. And it stays there for 3 days, which symbolizes Jesus did in a cave for 3 days. And when the oil is activated and it's resurrected, it will travel back up to the brain. But let me kind of go back a little bit here. The oil of gladness, this oil, it's produced in the claustrum, Santa Claus, that produces this psychophysical fluid, which then goes down, which then goes to the pineal and the pituitary gland. And the pineal gland electrically charges the fluid, and the pituitary gland magnetically charges the fluid. And this is called the milk and honey, but first it's made as the milk. And so the oil, the milk, it goes down the spine, but it's not like it goes down the bone, right? It goes down the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve, which connects us to everything. The vagus nerve is the main nerve in the central nervous system, which connects to the phrenic and then connects to the brain. And that's the tree of life. So when it makes its journey down there and it sits in that cave for 3 days, right? You have to fast. You have to remove yourself from all worldly things. You can't be doing anything negative. You can't have negative foods. So that means no monster drinks. You can't have burritos and burgers and French fries. And you have to basically be on a Daniel fast before you actually fast for these 3 days. And what happens to the body naturally when you fast for 3 days? On the third day, your body goes into a stasis where it starts to produce new cells. Now, the body does this regularly every single day. It produces new cells. But when you go into that form of stasis within the body, it regenerates all of your new cells, which means that's what born again actually means. And so when you're doing this, you're resting for 3 days, you're meditating, you're praying, and you're thinking only good thoughts. You can't be doing anything sexual. So no masturbation, no porn, especially no sex of any kind. You're basically removing yourself from all activity, all desire, all things that would destroy this oil. Because if you're in those lower vibrations, that lower state of mind, you'll destroy the oil and it will be wasted. But if you can preserve it for those 3 days, it will then make its journey back up the vagus nerve, back up the 33 vertebrae of the spine, or Jacob's ladder, and it will go back into the pineal, and it will be turned into this honey substance, which is called DMT, or the oil of gladness. And then you will experience God. So this is the natural way in which God wanted us to experience him. But it's not the only way. Obviously, many other people have experienced this through doing mushrooms and ayahuasca and things like that. But this is the original way that they want it. And this is what the Gnostics were teaching us. And it's in the Bible. There are allegory stories that hint at what they were actually trying to tell you. And I think that there's a part, and I don't remember exactly because there's so many verses in the Bible. I do not have the memory to be able to recount those things, but there is a part where Jesus says that I tell them an allegory because they neither have the eyes to see or the ears to hear, nor do they have the permission to know this knowledge. And only you, my followers, my disciples, may know these because you know the secrets. You know the secrets of the universe, and those are the secrets. So that is basically the sacred secretion. It happens with everybody. Everybody has the ability or access to do it. It's just that the path is narrow and few will find it.
Wow. Yeah, that's really powerful. And I love these interpretations of scripture and the interpretations of words and this experience, because it makes much more sense than, to me anyway, it makes a lot of sense.
I agree. That's why I'm so fascinated with it.
Right. Yeah. I think that's really beautiful. And thank you for, educating me and anybody who's listening that wasn't aware of what this is. I think that that's super, super powerful. Have you been able to experience this like regularly? I know that you talked about a couple of experiences where you had sort of these light experiences, but have you been able to utilize this tool?
So I tried it a few weeks ago. And I was not successful, unfortunately, because I didn't do it right. I fasted for 4 days, actually. And that was actually the longest I had gone. Prior to that, I was only able to do 2 days. And it turns out that when you fast, the second day is always the hardest. But once you make it over that hump, the third day is it's like a walk in the park, honestly. But I've only just now started experimenting with that. And the reason why I failed at it is because I ate this like big greasy chicken and cheese and oily burrito the day prior to that. And I didn't fast right. And I knew it. I was just like, in the background, I was like, but I'm still going to do it. I want to see what happens. And one of the things that I do notice that when I'm fasting is that I'm centrally focused, especially in my third eye. And it really puts you in sort of that spiritual state of awareness that you cannot really experience any other way, even if you're doing drugs or substances or whatever, because you have that laser focus too, because you don't have that kind of laser focus when you're on drugs. You know, you're kind of open to like everything. And so it's like opening the floodgates for good and evil. But when you're just centrally focused in on yourself and you remove yourself from, again, the worldly things of this world that can bring down your vibration, it's an amazing experience. But yeah, I unfortunately didn't have any moving experience yet, but I will definitely try it again. And I actually want to do the 40 days, 40 nights fast. That's the one that to me, I think is needs to be the next step in my spiritual journey.
That is wild. Totally. Yeah. You know, I have a group of friends that every 8th, 9th, and 10th of the month, they fast. So they're right in the middle of it right now. We're recording this on March 9th. And I don't know how they do it, you know, but like, but what you're saying and the fact that Holy Scripture does mention fasting so many times and how, you know, like this information that you're presenting, how it kind of locks it all together. This makes a lot of sense. So yeah, I'm really grateful to have my awareness opened to this new facet. I'm wondering if maybe you can share a little bit about van life, because I know that you mentioned it, that it was something that you explored. And I think that there is something to be said about sort of this spiritual evolution that's taking place right now, where there's a whole wave of individuals that have decided that consumerism or social constructs are not necessarily for them. And they've decided to sort of create their own reality in this way. And so I'm curious to hear what your experience was like with it.
Man, I was so enthralled with van life. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, and I still do. I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, I look at my life and I think, wow, I did that because it was so outside my norm. But I was really in such a perfect position in my life to do it because I don't have any children. I wasn't married. I'm not married even now. But like, I was in really like, there was no reason why I shouldn't do it because I got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm 40 years old. I'm single. I don't have any kids. I don't own a home. What the fuck am I waiting for? Can I say that?
Yeah. Yes, that's fine.
So it was just like, you know, I wanted to travel. I wanted to experience life in a different way. And I wanted to save money. Unfortunately, I was not able to do that because the van that I bought was a heaping pile of shit. But that's another story. Van life, to me, just seemed like literally probably one of the most perfect things that somebody could do, especially when you're young. I wish I had done it when I was younger, but I mean, nobody had heard about it before. I mean, when you heard about somebody living in a van, it was like that guy living in a van down by the river, you know, it wasn't like what it is today. You know, it's entirely different now. Now it's cool, you know, to be homeless, but I mean, you're really not homeless because I mean, I was living in luxury every single day. I lived off the coast of California and all of the major and small cities, all Carlsbad, Huntington Beach, all along the coast. I saw the Big Sur and I lived on the beach. I quite literally, I would maybe be across the street, but I'd wake up every day and I would park out on the state owned national parks. And I would live on the ocean. I'd do my work in my van and I'd have the view of the ocean right there. And it was amazing. It was beautiful. I made the most amazing friends on the road. The experience and the positivity that I went through with that, the hard part was really just the vehicle itself. I wish I had chosen something different, but I didn't. I chose that van and that was my personal experience with it. But van life is amazing, you know, and we are living in such a time, especially now with inflation, where it only makes financial sense to live in a vehicle because you don't have rent. You don't have water, you don't have trash, you don't have insurance, you don't have property taxes, you don't have to pay any of that bullshit. You don't have any bills. Your bills are the maintenance of the vehicle and feeding yourself and gas. And if you're not traveling that much, you're saving even more money. So financially, it makes a lot of sense. So what a lot of college students are doing to save money and to pay off their debt is they'll do van life. A lot of couples will move into their van or their RV and they'll, you know, save up to buy a home. or it's all about paying off debt or saving money, really, for a lot of people. So it's not just, you know, traveling all over. There's a financial sort of stability where it makes a lot of sense to at least do it for a little while until you get to the point where you want to be. And so that was so I really wanted to save money. Unfortunately, the vehicle I had, like I said, was quite costly. And unfortunately, I never saved any money. I was always fixing it. But if anybody's looking into it, I would highly recommend trying it. I would highly recommend at least renting a van for a few days and seeing if you like it. And if that doesn't work out, try an RV. I know that at some point down the road, I will definitely be doing this again, because again, the lifestyle, the freedom, I think is the most important thing, the best thing about van life. I never felt free in my life until I was doing van life. I'm serious. Like, it is the most freeing experience you can ever have. It's the most freeing existence you can ever have.
Wow. Yeah, I think that there's something to that. And in dream symbolism, they say that your vehicle is the direction of your life. So in this waking dream that we're in, I think that there is some sort of symbolism around that. I have some funny stories about attempting to do that, but, you know, I was like a homeless crackhead, so could not.
Maybe not the same thing.
I like went to an RV dealership and I was like, hello, I'm here for an RV. And they were like, okay, let's get your license and your credit card. And I was like, oh no, I don't have those things. I just need an RV. I'm in the care of, I think that God will take care of that for me.
Oh, like, you're crazy. Get out of here. There. That's funny. I mean, I was living very bougie. I had a refrigerator. I had my toilet. I had my shower. I had solar for all my electrical. I mean, I was fine. I had everything I needed.
That is so cool. Yeah. And, you know, like you shared, it is a concept that's very outside the box. And I think that it kind of lets go of societal programming around money and financial security and the idea that, like, we live so separate from not only the earth because we're trapped inside of these homes, but from other people too. So there's a whole community surrounded by this concept of living life this way, you know? So
less is more. Really cool. That's basically it. Yeah. You know, it's not about living in your home, but living outside of your home. And with the van, you know, you don't want to be in it all the time. It's just a place where you live, and you know, it gives you a sustainability that you can't have any other way.
Right. To actually like be out in the world living life instead of, yeah, I love that. That's so cool. So I really enjoyed this conversation today. I love getting to know you better. And I'm wondering if there's anything else that you'd like to share to feel more complete about our time, or if there's kind of like a spiritual teaching that you love to leave people with. I'd love to just give you some space to share.
Absolutely. If I could leave you with anything, I think the most important thing is to go within. The most important thing, there's a verse in the Bible where it says, let thy single eye be still and the body shall be filled with light. And that is the name of my podcast on YouTube, is Let Thy Single Eye Be Still. And that's about meditation. It's about going within. The kingdom of heaven lies within you, in the pineal. That is probably the most profoundly important thing that we could learn from the Bible, is to go within and to not always seek outside of ourselves, because God is within us all.
That is a beautiful, beautiful message to leave us with. And all of your links will be in the liner notes of this episode so people can connect with you. And again, thank you for your service to our community at IONS.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll see you next time.